And now.
Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I'm Tawanda Henry Beatty. And yeah, welcome to the best political podcast. Well, this side of the elections.
Yes. We inch ever closer to the elections. I understand that there's a cleanup process. People are checking their registration. I don't know if anyone's had any problems, but, you know, so far so good from what I've heard. And I hear people are still registering, so please go out and register to vote if you have not yet done so.
Yeah, definitely. Register to vote. Check your registration. Don't just rely on that text message. I think that's the message that needs to be reinforced. In fact, we can't even register to vote anymore because we're recording today on the 29th of May, and apparently today was actually the last day to register to vote.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So much for that one. I hope you have registered to vote. You are going to register.
And Dinasha. But don't worry. Kuna buru wangu aliko kwenu kwachikuira akasi asota zvino.
Oh, mune tokolo shenyu iri kusvipa mavhoti. Shout out to the tokolo in Cowdery Park.
What is this tokolo squad? And I know on Twitter, but I didn't follow it properly.
I don't know. It's look. This is the height of lunacy. You know, when you're approaching elections, everything becomes like this.
So yo, Nanga and my profit are working overtime, right?
Overtime. Where's the overtime bonus this year?
I'm pretty sure during Zantier primary elections, that's when it started, just before the primaries.
Because obviously we know certain G40 people were going to those guys. So those Maporofita and man have been in business for a long time. In fact, there's one that must be celebrating right now because of the return of a certain G40 leader.
Achatupiwa
bonus.
Porofita our savior is celebrating, I'm sure. Savior had Zoka, and I would like to believe that was his first port of call. Anything since we were evicted is very good advice.
Eh, I just want to go around and come across as a cowboy to pay.
Ah, wow! But the interesting segue into it. Yeah, so today we're gonna go. You know, it's been a while since we've recorded. We're going to go through some of the things that have been happening. First and foremost, the good.
We should apologize. You know, we're like bad partners. I don't even give excuses anymore.
Apologies. We've had some technical difficulties. Actually, all of you who listen to this podcast, my computer died. So if you'd like to donate to its rehabilitation so that we can get, you know, this podcast going again, feel free to do so. And I'm being serious, actually. So if you're willing to contribute to our fund,
iko
keshi no shanda kwese tinogadzirisa iko kesha hirambe kushanda. But do hit me up. But otherwise, yeah, so we're back. Today we're going to be talking about Savior. We're going to be talking about MDC primaries. We're going to be talking about
Deputy MPF. Minister of Finance.
Yes, Deputy Minister of Finance Mukupe. We're going to be talking about NPF and their leaked, and I put air quotes, conversation. And what else is there?
Yeah, I think that's about it, really.
Yeah, that's about it. And then we'll sort of just, you know, give maybe a quick wrap up of some of the things that are, or make some, I don't know, predictions. Some pedestrian predictions.
Pedestrian
predictions. As this is the month of June, so it's one more month, and then the month where at least we should have an announcement for elections or elections taking place. So this next month is going to be quite busy. So we'll see what happens in the next month. But yeah, Xavier's back. Xavier's back, back in the country. He flew back last week. And it was quite uneventful.
Yeah, there was there were three or four people who were protesting his return. You know, jealousy went to go and receive him at the airport, but he was roundly snubbed, as the Herald would say.
Sure, that was rude, though.
I'm not sure if he was jealous. Jealous, I know that's rude too much.
But Auntie Xavier is allegedly part of MPF. Clearly not right now.
No, the big man in his first interview with your newspaper there has said that he's going to fight.
No, it wasn't the newspaper. It was, wasn't it with
was it with Ruben? ZBC?
It was Ruben, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was an awkward interview. I watched part of it, actually. But yeah, he said he's going to farm. And said, politics. Obviously, he made a deal.
Yeah, he made a deal.
Obviously, he made a deal.
What kind of deal?
I have no idea. So Charamba was in the news today, and they were asking about, you know, prosecuting Xavier, and obviously, you know, Xavier's house was allegedly shot at by the cops, by the army during this, yeah. You know, and he was announced to be one of the criminals surrounding
Mama
the president.
Save us.
So, save us, Mama, save us. So apparently, yeah, so you know, everyone expected, myself included, that when he'd get back, you know, he'd be arrested, you know, the same treatment that the likes of Chombo got. Of which, it's a wonder what's actually happening with the Chombo case, as well as
Chombo's had his bail conditions relaxed.
Yeah, yeah, that much I do know. He's allowed to travel, isn't it? He got his passport back.
Yeah.
Anonzani, Hamandishe and Apolo Juicy, indeed.
Chipanga.
Chipanga, yes, Chipanga. Yeah, that's an interesting one to look at. You know, so obviously we expected the same treatment for Tyson, but it didn't. It didn't happen. He came back. He was, you know, there were people at the airport. He drove and he did an interview with ZBC. Yeah. And he says, I'm going to lay low. Temba, our good political man Temba over there was
political
tweeting.
Man.
Political man was tweeting that Temba should lay. Tyson should lay low. He should come back. He shouldn't be involved in politics. And I think this is perhaps, you know, part of the deal that he made. And obviously, I'd like to believe that, you know, in the G40 cabal, he was one of the key figures in G40. And it seems that since he left, he's tried as hard as possible to come back. And finally, they've found an amicable, quote-unquote, way for that to happen. I saw Professor was complaining about it on Twitter as well, you know, saying Xavier was actually the one who coined the term new dispensation. And obviously, there's been a falling out there. But I think, you know, he's back. He's going to, you know, kiss whichever feet he needs to, suck up, let this election go by. And then we'll see him on the ballot in 2023. He's going to, you know, ZANU doesn't shripa you. In ZANU-PF, there's room for return. The likes of Webster Shamu, I think, used their last one, their last get out of jail free card. But if you toe the line, there's space for you to come back.
Always, always. And I think it's sort of evident that, you know, the G40 itself was probably just a loose alliance as opposed to any real ideological movement, at least on the part of Xavier, because this isn't the first time he's sort of broken ranks with these guys. Every chance he's had, he's sort of broken ranks.
Well, this is the thing, you know what I mean? This is the thing in terms of what these factions are and what it is that they are trying to achieve, you know. It's it is very loose, the formation of them. And it was personal interests ahead of ideological or party or national interests. I mean, the G40 argument was, you know, this generational renewal one of, you know, the old guard must give way to the new. But even in the way it was done and executed was it wasn't done in a way that supported, you know, a change or a when the old goes out, they are still welcome and still a part of us. It was, we are getting rid of them completely, which then brings about tension. If they'd gone about it and said, well, listen, you guys have been here since 1980. It's now time for change. We're going to create, I don't know, an elders council, or we're going to have positions for you. We still need your guidance and your advice and your this and your that. This is within ZANU-PF, obviously. Then you can see that this is a transition from one group of within ZANU-PF to the next. But it wasn't that. It was, these guys are old.
Let's get rid of all of them.
Let's get rid of all of them. And it was an elimination, as in, you are no longer allowed or wanted to be part of ZANU-PF. And you can't operate like that, which is why I think, you know, they had problems, because it wasn't built on an idea of unity. It was a selfish agenda. It was a selfish agenda disguised behind this generational renewal message.
Right. I agree with you there. But yeah, anyway, welcome home, Xavier.
Yes, Xavier's back. So Xavier's back and Shamu's out. Shamu akabatwa achiringa.
Did we speak about that last thing? I don't think we did. I don't
remember. I honestly don't.
But apparently Shamu was fired not for rigging, but for taking money from NPF.
Is that so? I mean
that's unsubstantiated and highly. It's a rumor fueled thing. Listen, but apparently that's where the real beef is, that he was overly chummy with the NPF people.
I wouldn't put it past him, to be fair. I wouldn't put anything past Webster Shamu, to be fair.
Because we all know rigging is forgivable.
Doesn't he have like a 5-year-old son?
Ah, mate. Doesn't the president have a 5-year-old son?
That, I don't know. Does he?
I don't know. Also called Emerson.
No, but I understand that yeah, Webster, when he was thrown out after the whole Gamma Talk situation, fell under serious financial.
No, you're confusing him with Didymus.
No, Webster.
Didymus is the one that had a 4-year-old child, and you were saying my child doesn't have money for diapers. And everyone's about like, right. What's happening?
No, but I'd have to check my sister again. But I believe Webster's in the same situation or in a similar situation.
Yeah, shame. But yeah, he got fired.
That is that generation, and it shows, man. That generation is, yeah, no, it's we can't have that generation. We actually can't. We can't. we honestly can't.
But you know, the thing is, that generation is not really any worse than some of your new ZANU cadres that are coming up there.
The likes of
Terrence.
The likes
of Terry Mukube.
Terry.
Terry the Tiger.
Actually, you know, you're right. When a bad spot. I don't know Jakatika Pai Mukube, but Payakatika Pane Naru. Because so Terence Mukube, Deputy Minister of Finance, has been involved in quite a bit of scandal over the past few weeks.
That's an understatement.
The first incident was him allegedly beating up one of his officers at the Ministry of Finance because his allowance was, he wasn't happy with the allowance that he got when he went on a trip to South Africa. That issue was never dealt with in a
official.
There was no investigation. He alleges that it's election time and these are rumors that are being spread by, because it was primary elections time, and he says these are rumors that were being spread by, you know, opponents, and it was a political thing. And then what did he do?
Then he, or then somewhere along the line, he was at addressing a crowd, and he said that the army wouldn't let Chamisa win.
Yes. So to quote him somewhat directly, he says something along the lines of the army went in and it removed Mugabe, and now for it to give power to the, and well, he says, can you see it giving power to this small child? Essentially, that was, you know, that a quote. But what he meant was, obviously, they're not going to, you know, give power to Chamisa if he wins the election. And then the president, through his minister of
information.
Yes, he's the acting minister of information.
Why is that role not been made substantial?
That's no, it's what's his name's role, because he's got two ministries. Anon Zanuyu, SK Moyo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, SK Moyo is also minister of.
Oh, because he got the Minister of Information after Emerson had illegally appointed Chris Mchangwa as a minister.
So Chris Mchangwa was appointed Minister of Information, right?
Yeah.
And then he's Minister of Energy and Power Development. So he's acting minister as well of information.
Oh, because the, we're just waiting for
Mchangwa was appointed, and then obviously he couldn't take up the post. Then there was a vacancy in the ministry for a month or so, yeah. And then SK was appointed acting minister, and he's still energy and power development minister. So he released a statement, and he said, you know, the president has come out and he said that free and fair elections, army's not going to get involved. Whoever wins is going to be to become president. And your boy Terence Mukupe doesn't say anything after that. He then goes on to radio.
Before he goes on to radio, the online world was already up in arms at him, to the point that our dear Petina, too often mentioned in this podcast for an author.
for a non-political individual.
For non-political, she's awfully comes up awful an unfortunate amount. Anyway, allegedly, go ahead.
So Petina allegedly sends a DM to the real Matigari on Twitter. Who is the fake Matigari, not the real Matigari. Anyway, she got confused and sent the wrong message to the wrong Matigari. And she says, Mukupe, essentially, I'm going to paraphrase again. She says, you know, Mukupe is a problem. We need to get rid of him. We need to start an agenda, basically, to get rid of him. And that set Matigari off. Matigari then leaks it and says, Wonai, Zatarwana Petina, you know, she's going after Mukupe. And there was, you know, then Mukupe takes that as, you know, I think he posted that on his Facebook as well to show that, you know, there's an agenda against him. And some people want him out. Obviously they do, because he's calamitous. Then he goes on radio.
She was right in what she was trying to do. But of course, the question is, why is she trying to insinuate herself into internal ZANU-PF politics?
Yeah, she works for the government, doesn't she? Or she assists.
I thought it was a one-off thing. Is she still
on payroll? A one-time gig. I don't know. I don't know if she's still on payroll. Ah, she said she wasn't getting paid.
Yeah. So I mean. Anyway.
But obviously, but obviously, to be real, she has vested interests. Petina's been part of this project since December, we can say. And she has a favorable outcome. She's not been shy to say she wants Mnangagwa to win the election. She hasn't been shy. And obviously, there's something she's hoping for post that, you know, a cabinet position or, you know, a position in the administration in some way or form. And I think Mokope just stands in the way of, you know, the plan that she has for herself. And it's quite clear to see. I mean, he's calamitous. He was involved in that fuel scandal last year, where, you know, allegedly he had trucks that were coming in and
not paying duty,
and not paying duty for fuel. You know, they'd say that they were going to Zambia, but then they'd offload somewhere in Harare or along the route and then move on. You know, that Nyaya never. It just sort of died as well. And then all these things. And then he was on radio with Tendai Biti. And what happened there? I didn't actually... Well, I just saw the clips.
I mean, it was...
Did you listen to the whole thing?
I listened to the whole thing. And it was a disaster, man. The format is all wrong to have an honest debate.
Were they on Pakistani and KBG?
Yeah, it seems so.
Oh,
okay,
that's ridiculous.
And I think the mistake that I think they were two very different things, two very different goals.
So just explain though to some who might not.
So Terence Mokope is obviously the Deputy Minister of Finance at the moment, yeah. And during his interview on Star FM on a Monday night, I think not this week but the week before. He made some claims about Tendai Biti's time in office and Tendai Biti's time in the finance ministry, including saying, you know, he left the country with about $257 or whatever in the bank. And then Star FM said, "Oh, look, we will give TB a right of reply, and you two can debate between the two of you on Thursday." And that's what this next interview was meant to be. These are garrulous individuals, so it quickly, obviously, degenerated into a mess. I'm obviously biased, but for once, it wasn't TB being the main aggressor or being the overly unreasonable one. And so it sort of ended up with, I think, as the interview wore on, there were lots of interjections from Scary Terry, and he was, I think to quote the statement was, "Don't invite me here to come and have drunken conversations with people." And then Terence Mokope broadside goes, "Oh, have you taken your air visa or whatever?" I don't remember the exact quote today. So from then on, it just sort of degenerated into a shit show, for lack of a better word. But obviously, his comments and the stigma around those comments weren't taken very well online.
Online and in the media.
And in the media, and just for any really sane, reasoning individual.
Mm. Yeah, no, I mean, it's unfortunate that this is where we are at. And obviously, you know, it shows the level of immaturity, can I call it, in Zimbabwean politics. I don't think KVG and Pakistan was the right platform for such a debate to happen, first and foremost. But even though, you'd expect that, you know, two individuals... you know, a deputy minister of finance and a former minister of finance would sit down and would have a conversation which Zimbabweans can get the best benefit out of it. You know, you're talking about the economy. These are two people who should be able to articulate their party's positions on the economy going forward. That's the first thing.
So what happened in the interview, I don't know if you have a look at the whole clip. Early on in the interview, yeah. It wasn't very... it wasn't very heated. I'm forgetting the exact moment, but Mokope quoted a figure, and TB said, "Oh, you're wrong." And TB had brought with him receipts, for lack of a better word, but he had brought these reports and things like that.
Yeah.
And so halfway through the interview, or not even halfway, in the early parts of the interview, he hands him this document and says, look, you can't be lying to people here.
Yeah.
And I think that's when it sort of kicked off.
Started to degenerate.
Because it's like we have opinions. And
yeah.
When we discuss the Zimbabwean opinion, our level of discussion is at a certain basic understanding.
Pedestrian
in as far as we've moved out of the bar. We're no longer at bar talk levels.
Yeah.
We're now walking on the street. So, you know, from my viewing of the interview, those are the same type of opinions and same type of level of arguments that were being brought forward by Honorable Mokope. In as far as when presented with evidence, he just didn't know the material. He didn't know.
Well, this is the thing,
and then he's going on saying, "Oh, but you didn't pay debtors. You didn't pay people." They say, "Oh no, but that's not how it works." And when they're now having a discussion about how to do the administrative processes work. And clearly you can see there's either a person has no respect or no actual understanding of those administrative purposes. And there was a telling moment, and I think a lot of people don't really remember or realize. There's this thing that, oh yeah, you know, you set up a slush fund for Tsvangirai in the Prime Minister's offices. And the minister says, oh, but you know, a minister doesn't do that. A minister doesn't actually give people money. That money doesn't come from a minister. They're in a properly functioning ministry. There are checks and balances to the fact that as a minister, you can't just go and say, "Ayo chipa munu yumari."
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, you know, you saw TB sort of fell back on and said, but you know, you can't do that. But obviously, if you are working and operating in a ministry where when you don't get your funds or you don't get your allowance, you can slap a staffer, you wouldn't even be aware or understand those checks and balances.
Yeah, no, Mokope is a liability, as far as I'm concerned, within ZANU-PF. I don't know, you know, what's happening with him. I saw in the Standard that he was attacking George Karamba this week in the Standard.
Another nasty attack as well.
another nasty attack, and he had all sorts of things to...
And this comes from the primaries.
Yeah, it comes from the primaries, and he says that Charamba is in a relationship with Mavis Kumbo, and they want me out, and all sorts of things. And I don't know why he's gone this way, because it doesn't help ZANU-PF in any way. This does not at all help ZANU-PF, but obviously Pane Paakatsika, because, you know, he's managed to survive, you know, this long. I'd have called him if I were them, because he's a problem, or at least gagged him. He's not allowed to talk to the media, he's not allowed to do anything. Where's Chinamasa? What's happening with Chinamasa? Chinamasa's been very quiet. But the problem with Mokope is the amount of coverage he gets. It translates. I mean, this goes international, and
yeah, like that Chamisa thing was worldwide.
Yeah, you know, and this is the whole issue of them wanting to have a free and fair election, and they've worked quite hard to get the international community on board. I mean, yesterday or the day before, you know, they signed an MOU with the European Union to bring observers to the country, and this is the first time they've been in the country for close to 20 years, since 2003, I think.
Yeah.
So 15 years. So the work that the government is doing, in part, is being held back by people like Mokope. And on the ground, it might not be a problem in terms of their electorate and their base. But the perception that it gives outside, especially when Zimbabweans, the online community, you know, they tweet and they at Catriona Lang and they at all these news agencies and they at Philippe Van Damme from the EU. And they, you know, they haven't...
They force them to make statements online.
Yeah. Reuters will write about it and Bloomberg will write about it. And these things get picked up. So if they're not managing that aspect of, you know, what's happening there, then they're going to face some very tough questions later on. And it wasn't just Mokope. Who else was it? Someone else said something. There was a report as well.
Or just Hungwe.
It was Josiah Hungwe as well, who said something, you know, related to the army and the army not, you know, relinquishing power to Chamisa if he wins, or to any opposition if the opposition wins. I think this is something that they're going to seriously have to come out and nip in the bud. They're going to have to gag Mokope. They're going to have P.V. Sibanda come out and say, listen, we are not a part of this. Free and fair elections, whatever happens, happens. And we are prepared to salute whoever comes in. I think that's a very important thing, because in the past, the army have said we would not salute Tsvangirai. And that, you know, that was before the 2008 election, and that literally, you know, led us to a situation that we are in today. And they were involved in rigging the election for Mugabe. So I think it would be a massive, massive, massive show if the army holds this press conference and says, let the civilian process play out, especially also because they were involved in the coup. And so it really makes the waters very muddy right now. And until there is some sort of show and a statement about it that people can, you know, at least refer back to and say, oh, but you said, this is what you said, we can quote you on this, then we're not going to go into this election with, or it's going to dampen the confidence of how free and fair this election is going to be.
Yeah, I think you're right. But anyway, he's a loon, and
I want to see no particular.
But he's strong. And you know, this whole time I assumed that he was part of G40. But I think that's the because he was brought in by Xavier, your Xavier's guy. So I assume Pane something. His wife also apparently is the daughter of someone high up. But I mean, these are now all
speculations and rumors. I wonder who is Nanga is.
Should we start a list? A directory.
That guy must be getting paid real money.
Real money. I hope you are diesel thing. But talking for another party that right now must also have been consulting their but MDC tinema profit, Roma profit agent.
Oh, you only deal in the anointed, new age.
Anointed when?
In anointing.
Anointing and anointed words, because God is in it. Hashtag.
Giraffe anointings.
Giraffe anointings. Alice in Wonderland anointings.
Ah, wow. Yeah, so before we get to that, quickly, ku NPF, there was a leaking of a video. Prof's been tweeting. Hey, Prof tweets up on mine. My way.
You know, tweets. How can you even? He's got nothing better to do.
That's true, man. Like,
no, but legit, like, did you quite, see? Sorry, go ahead.
No, like, it's actually just because he marks, you know, you can see he really wants to be a teacher again. Like, I really wish he could, you know, just go back to a classroom, because he screenshots these newspaper articles or when he's doing threads, and then he underlines them in red. And he and then he adds to my little commentary aside, and you know, it's really like he's marking an assignment or something. Shame, poor guy. But yeah, so I didn't see the video, but I saw, you know, João writing something about a leaked audio where they were accusing jealousy of stealing money.
Yeah, so it's a video, and I assume they must have just had lunch or something. So it's a prof and João in Kenya. You can tell because of the number plates on the cars, and they're taking a walk as two grown men do together. And they're just having a chat, and they are speaking of how Ambrose Mutinini can't be trusted with money, and how also Jealousy has also spent money for shirts and they haven't arrived. I mean, just gossipy things, and they're basically saying Jealousy would never be trusted by Muchembere. Because if they give you married isho mashoma and vukaijga mchembere, is never gonna trust you. Prof was at pains to explain that mchembere is the name that they use between themselves as a monkey or as a nickname. But I mean, look, you're free to make your own conclusions. João obviously then came out and apologized to NPF and Jealousy, saying that conversation wasn't meant for public consumption, and it was something that would have just been said between two people and my jokes, basically. So the question is, why was it leaked? Because it's I mean, I don't know if anyone's ever tried to host a live video. It's quite an effort because you have to press a number of times to confirm that you want to go live. And then the way the phone was situated in the pocket was such that it was actually showing everything that was going on, as opposed to if it was Mwome in your pants. I mean, generally, I don't know how people carry their phones, but it seems a very unusual point so for your phone to be in your breast pocket, providing a bird's eye view of your environment, as well as a crystal clear audio of the person you're talking to. It seemed calculated and was done on purpose, but I don't understand why.
You can't understand the habits of the professor, but or the actions of the professor, but that was deliberate. There's no way. No, you know what? I actually think that there's a move against it, and it might be a move against, you know, people within the NPF as well. So these guys are on the outside, and they have to find a way back in first and foremost, but they also have to find a way to control this entity that they've created. And if you're saying that Ambrose is not good with money and that Jealousy is a liability, then you remove them, right? This is part of your ploy to remove them and place in whoever you feel that, you know, you can control. Perhaps they're at the point where they feel that they can't control Jealousy and Ambrose anymore.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, seeing as it's all speculation, maybe they've engineered a fallout with Xavier while he gets back in the country, and then undermine Ambrose. And then Xavier is faced with that, oh, you know, but the people wanted me to. I didn't want to do it, but the people wanted me to.
Yeah, it could be. It could be.
Look, if anyone, I don't know if it's been deleted, but it's already available on YouTube, on the Neander radio page. Go and have a look.
Go check it out. I haven't seen it. Yes.
There's nothing even shocking or no revelations at all, but it's just good about Magaji Kamari, a t-shirt shit, essentially.
My games are profess. My games.
That's
but true. On to the MTC.
Oh, yes.
MDC is having its primaries, but before they do that, they still have court cases open as to who is the true MDC. And last week, I think it was, that they went to court, and there was an incident outside the court. I think the court, so the Supreme Court, I think it was, said that this is a matter that should be dealt with in the High Court.
Yeah, Justice Bere had misdirected himself, and the matters should be heard at trial. Basically, they said, it needs to be sorted out, who's the legitimate ones, and it's not one of those things that can be dismissed. Not really a win, but nonetheless, that doesn't stop my fellow comrades in the Nerorist camp from claiming it as a win. And then outside, there were protesters. I don't know if you can even call them protesters. They were hecklers who began to abuse Mike Hoppe and Linda as Mahure. Chanting at them as they walked out of the courthouse. Infantile childish and makes the party look bad. And I don't understand who organizes these people and who allows these things to happen. And it's exactly that, a lack of leadership, because, you know, then the argument is always, oh, those aren't true MDC comrades and everything like that. But if you've ever been to if you've ever been to support Chero, support ye Boraga, panimuna no manage a crowd, and the fact that there's not a single leader there, and especially seeing as comrade Joanne Mumbe was there, the lady who's looking to win the Harare East primary. She was there, part of the crowd. She says she was
Harare West.
Harare West, yeah. She was there, part of the crowd. She wasn't chanting. Fair enough. I'm not going to accuse her of chanting. I'm going to say, as a leader in the party and as a prospective leader in the party, you should have been able to stand up and say, no, comrades, this is wrong. Mm. Because there's pictures of her there, ka? So maybe you weren't chanting. Mm. Cool. But you want to be a member of parliament, so surely you should have been able to stand in front of that crowd and said, no, no, comrades, let's not do this. Mm. So yeah,
I think you know, we have a huge problem as a nation and within political parties, and one of the things that I'll criticize the MDC for is not taking ownership of a lot of issues you know, within that they have and that they're dealing with. So the violence is one of them, for example. We all know that ZANU-PF has been a violent party, right? That is, we're not going to hide that under a bush or anything. But the MDC also has a violence problem, and it's manifested in different ways over the years, right? You know, people like Trudy Stevenson can tell you about it as well. My good friend, who is now a Chamisa supporter, Mark Katsaura, can also tell you about the violence within the MDC. And now, you know, this coupe incident, if we go... Mark, one day he will tell you the story. You can actually ask him. Uh-huh. But, you know, what was I going to say? Yeah, so the coupe incidents, you know, there's multiple ones. And I remember, I'm not sure which interview it was. I have to find it. But Chamisa then says, oh, these were ZANU-PF people who infiltrated. And I don't think that's the right narrative to go to. Because you are pushing the issue aside. You're saying, this can never be us, so it must be someone else. But you're not realizing that you have a problem within your own camp. And it's one of those where you can't deny that you have this, that you have bad elements within your people, and you might not want it to be your people. It might not even be things that you stand for, or you might want them to be your people, but not things that you want your people to do. But unless you address the issue, and unless you take charge and say, this is not who we are, then you're going to keep getting a situation where whenever it happens, you brush it off and you blame someone else. You shift the blame, but you never deal with it internally. And when people ask you, well, what steps have you taken internally to deal with it? I haven't seen anything. I mean, I've heard that, oh, we are going to disciplinary committees and those that, you know, will be removed from the party. But I don't know, maybe you know more because, you know, you of your connections there. But is there a clear example of people that have been thrown out, or how this violence has been dealt with within the party?
I mean... Charlton Wende, Shakespeare Mkoe, all these guys have been suspended by the party before. And then upon a disciplinary hearing, they served their suspensions 6 months, 3 months, and then they came back. So to answer your question in short, no. There's been nothing that has convincingly been done about comrades that have been identified as violent in the party, and it's a problem. It's a serious problem, and it's one that I get the feeling it's one that is going to take real leadership for it to be fixed. There's no appetite to attack it just before an election, as it were. And that's completely wrong, in my opinion. And also, it shows ka culture ke, you know, that was sort of built before. And when you take over a superstructure that has these tendencies, you either fall in line or, you know, you basically have to be the one that controls these elements, or these elements will be turned against you.
I mean, it's, yeah, I this goes across the board. I think it's a national problem that we're dealing with here, because I don't think any political party is, you know, is immune to this issue. And I think it can arise, and it can arise in so many different situations. We've seen it in a football setting as well. Matches between Dynamos and Highlanders have turned violent for whatever the reasons might be. So it's not one that is restricted to ZANU-PF or restricted to the MDC. I mean, we have a gender-based violence, issue as well to deal with. So
what's not okay is that whenever we speak of MDC violence, we're always reminded of how violent ZANU-PF is.
Yes.
And for me, it's, look, there's a time and place to speak about that, but if you're a leader and if you truly want the best for the country and particularly for your party, you can say, yeah, we need to sort that out. It doesn't need to be a situation where you say, ah, look, we're not as violent as ZANU. Or how can someone from ZANU tell me I'm violent when you've killed people?
Yeah.
What about Gugu Ndi?
That's completely it. I think it's one of those where this shifting blame or this whataboutism needs to go. Yes, we acknowledge all those things, but if you're not going to deal with the issues within your own camp, can we honestly trust you to deal with the issues at a national level or, you know, beyond your own space if you are to come into government? How do you then deal with these issues if you're not going to take a decisive action right now? How do we know what building blocks or what you stand for, what frames that you're going to, you know, put into our space? And I think this is one of the things that they're going to have to tackle. I don't know if, you know, as you said before, it would be best if they dealt with it now, but, you know, they're dealing with primaries perhaps, so maybe
the primaries themselves,
the primaries have been said to be violent as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've been really trying to follow it, and I've got no real results to give everyone. So apologies for anyone that's expecting any actual outcomes from that. I definitely have heard reports of violence, but it's one of those things that's somewhere in between. It's not as widespread as the Herald would have you believe, and it's not as rosy as Newsday would have you believe. I think the main battlefield right now has been Kuwazana, and funnily enough, it's got Shelton Wende and Shakespeare Mkwe going against each other in that constituency, and
so,
that gives
balance me this on the issue of MDC primaries, because I'm a bit confused. So my understanding was that it was going to be how does the consensus work, and how does the primary, how do you go from we are going to decide on consensus to we are going to decide on primaries? And I ask this because there are some senior MDC individuals who've come out and said, well, this process isn't, right. Jessima Jome pulled out. She says, listen, I can't be challenged, or I shouldn't be challenged, or whatever, however she phrased it. And she pulled out. Elias Mutsuri, who is a vice president of the MDC, also came out and said, I shouldn't be challenged because I'm a vice president of the party. I understand that James Mardadi is also someone who lost his primary election.
Yeah.
So now I'm not against the process of democracy. I believe, you know, each party can follow its own rules and things like that. I'm not even a member of the MDC, so I'm not going to comment on what I think should have been done. It is up to the party to decide. But how does it work? So
the understanding of the consensus was that you should have a scenario where, for example, a strong candidate or a candidate in a constituency, and anyone who wishes to oppose them would come together and agree, good, yeah, no, you run here, I'll run there, and basically come to an agreement so that you avoid the need for a primary election.
For a primary election, okay.
The primary is then called in those constituencies that have not managed to come to those to that conclusion. And okay. As you can see, I mean, just going from the list of constituencies, a majority actually of MDC seats have actually been decided by consensus.
Okay.
The ones that have had challenges, you know, have had sticking points, and the same ones that have had issues, because you end up with two people who believe they're strong candidates running against each other. And that's generally when you have that type of clashes, when you're going to have some friction. It's not church. It's not Sunday school. So there's bound to be some sort of... there's going to be a lot of strife.
Okay. Do you think that it's wise to let go of some of the senior members of the party? Or do you think that, you know, some of them should have been protected?
I don't believe that anyone should have been protected. My simple reasoning for that is, primarily as a politician, besides serving the people, your job is winning election. Let's be honest. So if you can't win a primary after having been a member of parliament for 10, 15, 20 years, then you don't deserve the seat.
Fair enough.
Like, it's as simple as that. If you're not good enough in politics to keep your seat, then you don't deserve it. Because you've got the power of the incumbency. You've got everything mm-hmm. going for you. Like, look at Mudzuri, Anne Bauer, for crying out loud. He drives a Jag. If you can't win a primary with those resources behind you, then you don't deserve it.
No, fair enough. That makes sense. Do you know... Well, so
Mudzuri's agreed to... Mudzuri's going for Senate, happening, yeah.
So Jesse Majome said, you know, there were assurances made, and, you know, her excuse was, well, I was given assurances that I wouldn't be challenged, or, you know, senior party officials wouldn't be challenged, and... what was the other thing? And so she was campaigning elsewhere for the party. And she says, well, you know, and whilst I was campaigning, others were campaigning in my constituency, or my opponent was campaigning in my constituency. I haven't seen any comment from Nelson regarding the primary elections.
There was a comment from Komichi today about primary elections. And he sort of said there's a list of problem constituencies that they're going to sort out. He mentioned the fact that Mudzuri is going to go for Senate. I didn't see anything about GSC, but basically he said, "Oh, it's all is good and all is good," which isn't entirely true. I think GSC's argument that they had been told that they would be protected, I think it's fair enough. But I think that there was then a subsequent change in policies. And once there's a change in policy, you sort of do Jiripo. And
was this a change in policy that was communicated and accepted, or was this a change in policy that was imposed?
I think it was imposed. It was a presidential change in policy, in the same way that the decision to protect seats was made by the president of the party. So he reversed his decision and he communicated the reverse of the decision in the same way that he had communicated that decision in the first place.
Was he the first one to was he the one to make that decision? Was that a decision made by the previous?
I think the decision was made by the previous president. And then when Chamisa came in, he came in with that same assurance and he reaffirmed that people's seats would be protected.
I don't know the inner workings. It seems to be that that's a bit of a problem. Or that's where problems are in the way decisions are made and taken and, you know,
I think
for a party, for a movement of democratic change, unilateral decisions on certain, you know, key issues to deal with the political party itself.
I think there's an irony there. Yeah, but if a president decides to course correct for democratic purposes, I don't see the problem.
That's fine, and I completely agree with, you know, it being for democratic purposes and openness.
I understand what you're saying.
I'm trying to understand the landscape of it, you know.
Where the organization itself has decided to vest certain powers within an office, including decisions as to how internal elections for primaries will be run, including decisions of how negotiations for alliances and seats would be run, and then that person exercises those powers, I don't see how that's undemocratic.
Fair enough.
Because the decision to vest those powers were in that office were already made before he came.
Too much power, man. Too much power vested in one office. Ah, that's all I'll say.
Because what happened was, and it's pretty much my understanding is what's led to this whole Mokope situation is this whole, it's not Mokope, sorry, Coupe.
Coupe situation, yeah.
There's a picture of the two of them together that's floating around on the internet. It's really funny. My understanding is that alliance and primary issues were put in the office of the president because they're causing so many divisions. Under Tsvangirai's time. Tsvangirai had this idea for a coalition, and Chamisa has decided to run with that same idea. That idea for a coalition was fairly roundly opposed by certain sections of the party.
Mm-hmm.
Those sections have left. Some of them still remain. But either way, the decision to put negotiation powers in the president's office and the final say essentially in the president's office, for me personally, I believe it was a necessary one, because that's how coalitions get made. You can't make a coalition with a committee.
I don't dispute the issue around the coalition and who should negotiate it. It's the internal democracy of the MDC, obviously this is one individual who's complained about it. It's not en masse, and so we can take it as it's just a high-profile case. And so we can say that the rest of the party goes along with it, and that's completely fair and fine. It's just, you know, no one man should have all that power.
Especially
where, you know, you think, and this is for all the individuals within it, you think you're going in one direction, and then someone wakes up tomorrow and says, well, no, this is what we're going to do, you know, and so I'm basing it again off this Jesima Jomi situation and off the Mutsuri one as well, where it seemed like it was sprung up on them, and not something that was communicated. I'm not sure what the channels are within the party itself as well, but and how this message was communicated within the party. So I don't know if we spoke in brief about, you know, the organization or the administration of the MDC on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if this is one of the inefficiencies, or if this is a result of the inefficiency of day-to-day administration within the MDC.
There's a there's two things at play, right? There's two very important elections that are happening in the next 18 months for the MDC. There's the 2018 harmonized election, and then there's the 2019 Congress.
Yeah.
One has to wonder what position will Chamisa be in, should he lose resoundingly in this coming election, or should he lose this election? And one has to wonder what position other people would be to challenge him at the what? The coming Congress.
Yeah.
And there are some people who wear spectacles and who write constitutions who are much savvier politicians than people give them credit for. And
hello, Douglas.
And historically speaking, the MDC's fissures have been along SG and presidential lines. However, this SG...
He's been quiet, by the way.
He was initially against the way a certain person came to power, but then he fell in line. And one has to just wonder, and this is pedestrian opinions and speculations, one has to wonder is, what's the long game? And I think Douglas is smart enough to realize that he just needs to keep quiet and make it and see what happens at the Congress.
That's very interesting. But
and
but
in fact, he doesn't need to do much to if perceived issues like this, where if you had the Secretary General on your side working hard to convey these messages, which is the job of the SG, then you would, you know, you would be fine.
But the thing is, so the question is, but will he, I mean, we're speculating here, but will he then have the numbers? It's something to see, because it seems that Chamisa, you know, is recruiting, and he has his people coming in.
Yeah, but you're forgetting Munzura has already beaten Chamisa once at a Congress.
That is true. That is true. I think we can leave it there. I think we can leave it there, and we can, you know, see what happens come the future. I think that's also an interesting place to leave it for the podcast. How long have we been on?
We've been on for an hour, so thank you guys.
Yeah.
And yeah.
The next 30 days. The next 30 days should be interesting. I know ZANU-PF is going to be in full campaign mode. Get ready for it. They're starting. I think they've started, but now the next 30 days are going to be full force in terms of, you know, the month of June is where they're going to be strong on their campaign. I don't know what Chamisa has planned. I see the folk at Cappy Talk have been conducting, I don't even want to call them debates, conversations with political individuals. I know Zwizwai was on yesterday with Paul Mangwana and I'm forgetting who the third individual was. I caught a bit of it. I mean, it's going to be the same old, same old. One thing we haven't spoken about much, which we are hoping to do so, and hopefully Upenyu is going to pull through for us, is the Women in Politics.
We decided that, episode. That two men lecturing you about women would be the height of.
I would. It just wouldn't work.
It just wouldn't work.
So we'll see when we can get that to you. But yeah, you know, locked and loaded. Thank you for listening. On my side, I'm good.
All right. Thank you for listening, guys. Bye.